You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
This is East Carolina Hall of Famer and Utah Jazz first-round draft pick Blue Edwards. You're listening to Pirate Basketball Overtime on The Sports Objective, your home for the best East Carolina hoops coverage.
Welcome into Pirate Basketball Overtime here on the Sports Objective. Pirates go down in Lakeland, Florida. Tiger Town, if you will, Florida 70, East Carolina 65. With us right now from China Grove, North Carolina, Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Very close call for the Pirates tonight. Just could not make the plays when we needed to. So many missed opportunities at the rim. But at the same time, proud of the fight the guys showed after falling behind by 11 there in the first 10 minutes of the game.
Yep.
And after allowing 23 points in the first 10 plus minutes, you had the Gators just score 47 the remainder of the way. And really proud of the way the guys gave us an opportunity to win. Florida had been scoring 84 points a game. So great to hold them to 70. I'm sure if you ask Coach Schwartz prior to the game, if you hold the Gators to 70, would you feel good about your chances? And I'm sure he would have. And they had been killing opponents on the backboards, out-rebounding the opposition by 10 or 11 boards per game. And that continued tonight. But amazingly, considering East Carolina got out-rebounded 51-32, we still had a chance to win. We forced 18 Gator turnovers, and also Florida really struggled at the charity stripe, 15 out of 28. And unfortunately, another heartbreaking loss, just like on Saturday against South Carolina. But I think it'll pay dividends down the road. At least I hope it does.
No doubt. In the green room, we have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. We'll get him in just a second. Matt Semenza, house divided. Chrissy one, Matt nothing. Is that what's up, bro? If you need a couch to sleep on, you can come here to Northeastern North Carolina, and I've got actually beds you can sleep on. I got bedrooms here available if you need it.
Yeah, what's up, guys? That is a tough one for me because my wife is a Florida Gator, and a really solid effort on the road by the Pirates. Especially defensively, like Bubba mentioned, to hold that team to 70 points, you have to feel really good about the effort defensively. But, I think Florida really gave us opportunities to win that game. I mean, that was a game that was there for the taking. And, they really struggled shooting the ball from the perimeter and also really struggled at the free throw line as well.
Horrible.
So that was a game that was there for the taking. But – winning these games, winning tight basketball games down the stretch is something that this team is going to learn how – they're going to need to learn how to do that.
Right.
And, maximizing possessions down the stretch, getting good shots, not turning the ball over. That's a learned skill set. And they're not quite there yet offensively. But, you can see this team getting to a point where they start to win these games.
Let's bring in now, ladies and gentlemen, my buddy Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up?
What's going on, guys? It's crazy is that you could really argue and really make a good argument that we should be 2-0 against the SEC.
Yeah.
Lost them both, unfortunately. But we can't do. We need to win out the rest of our non-conference games. We stubbed our toe a couple of times. No shame in losing to South Carolina, Florida, George Mason. The shame is we really should have beaten South Carolina, and we could have won this game. It is what it is. We need to take care of business the rest of the non-conference. These games, like Bubba said, will pay dividends down the road when you're playing Florida Atlantic and Memphis and Wichita State and Temple, et cetera, in conference, UAB, North Texas. So, yeah, these kind of games should pay dividends down the road. And, you know, we've looked the part. We've looked like we belong on the floor with Florida and South Carolina.
I mean, guys, this, and what's crazy about this, their net is like, what, 40, Bubba? They were talking about
it. I checked that just prior to the game. I think it's 42 or 43. I mean, and the net, much like the RPI in baseball early in the season, and I know we're a third of the way through the season now, but still, you know, it's kind of quirky because I looked, the Gators, 43, and then you had McNeese State, despite a very similar record of like 5-3 or 5-2 or something. They were, okay, KenPom number 30 for Florida. Thank you, Chuck. But, yeah, McNeese State was ahead of Florida, which I haven't seen their schedule, but I found that interesting. So can be kind of quirky early in the year and kind of things filter, you know, kind of get to where you would think they would be later on as the season goes, kind of as it did in baseball.
Yeah, you know, well, Manny's RPI could be off just because of one game. They could have one crazy win. Yeah, early in the year like this. Matt, do you when you guys play the Gators and Chrissy, you know, your wife's obviously a Florida Gator alum. Do you ever taunt her and play that clip of that I don't know if it's a senator, congressman, what she was.
I know what you're talking about.
Go Gator.
tonight we pretty much watched from different rooms.
Really?
I did have my son lean. there you go. There it is. My son was. I got to tell you though, like anybody who watched that game objectively, you had to realize that. Now, listen, I'm not saying we were perfect because we made our share of mistakes, but the officiating in that game tonight was horrendous, and
it was definitely
several bad. I mean, really bad calls. When we
rebound off of somebody's hair, what's it when?
Yeah,
not when can a ball go off somebody's hair? Yes. By the way, I'd have all my players, if that's going to become no more dreads, no more long hair, that'd be he'd be getting a haircut tomorrow.
Hey, by the way, please help me understand this, guys, I'll let you guys take the light work on this because I always beat up on the officials. What was the deal with the out of bounds play where neither official that's close, they both didn't see the call and they called a jump ball? I mean, I'm going, this is
the division. It should have been reviewed just like the hair play.
I don't understand that call. Bubba, help me out on that one.
Yeah, that was, you saw Schwartz on the sidelines shaking his head over that one. Like, you got to be kidding me.
I mean, my son has rec officials that they really do a good job considering here in Williamston for, you know, seven from kids that are 7 years old to 12 years old, and they do a better job. They don't miss that call. And I'm like, I can understand if it's like a rec official and there's like one official there, I'm going to give that guy a benefit of a doubt. But when you have three guys on the floor and two were close to the play and you can't, they're like, did you, like, they conferred, even the official, I mean, even their, I love you, Justin. I do love you, Justin. I'm not saying every official is bad. And I know he does well from what I've been told around football.
Just the majority of them.
yeah. I'm just frustrated with that because
it was a bailout for Florida. It was those officials were clearly leaning towards the quote unquote home team. If it was a neutral site, no calls went our way. Every call went Florida's way. What you're going to expect when East Carolina's playing Florida, but.
As soon as that one went against us, though, that play on the baseline, I say as soon as it went against us, as soon as they did not, as soon as it there was any doubt there, I was like, it's going to go against us. You just had a feeling. I've seen too much, and so. But William Landon chiming in, he's saying if we can continue to play good defense and clean up some of our finishes around the rim, I think we'll be fine in conference play. And I agree that's one of the most encouraging things tonight is that after falling behind by 11 there in the first 10 minutes of the game, that we were able to dictate the way the game was played, and that we were able to keep it in the upper 60s and 70 as opposed to up there where Florida's playing in the mid 80s. And even in the mid 90s against an excellent club like Baylor. And sorry, go ahead, Matt. I didn't mean to cut you off a moment ago.
No, absolutely not. I mean, but I do think we've found the formula that it's going to take for this team to be successful. That if you look over the last four games, this team has found its defense.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the season, we were very sloppy defense, but they found their defense. Now they're playing really well on that end of the court. And I think that's going to be the formula for this team. You're going to have to grind out games that, you know, just like tonight, where you get down into the last minute and you're going to need to make some buckets. But that's going to be this team's go-to, is lean on your defense, try to make some big shots. Now, you know, I do think that, you know, what you saw down the stretch tonight with when Cam Hayes took the brick three at the end of the game, one of the reasons, guys, why he had the ball there was because Pettiford came out of the game.
Yeah.
It looked like he rolled his ankle. So what Coach Schwartz was trying to do, he was trying to run pick and pop at the perimeter with Brandon Johnson.
It was supposed to be for BJ. Yeah.
Yeah.
That shot was for BJ.
Yeah. But when Pettiford went out, it just, you know, Cam Hayes, listen, the guy's rusty. Anybody who's played basketball, when you haven't played for a long time, that is difficult to go into a game like that and just find your shot. But he just completely rushed it. He threw up a brick. I'm certain that's not the way Schwartz drew it up.
No, and to your point, Matt, very quickly, Dave, Coach Schwartz, and you saw when that shot, ill-advised shot by Cam Hayes happened.
Was not happy.
You saw Schwartz look at him, and, you know, he was like, and gestured and passed it to Brandon.
Yeah, by the way, guys, speaking of Cam Hayes, a sidebar, I was talking about in the green room, and Kyle, you didn't hear this, but I am really upset. And so, Justin, I'll give your officials a pass as much as I can, but I am not giving – I will still beat up on the NCAA. Yesterday, the NCAA, guys, I don't know if you saw this, but I saw this right before the show, so I'm really upset, and help me out on this. But yesterday, they said that anybody that plays during the time of the temporary restraining order, the TRO, as they're calling it, that they will not be in jeopardy of losing eligibility to, you know, in other words, if you play a couple weeks, it's a year of your, you know, like gone. Well, now tonight they're saying the exact opposite. If the temporary restraining order is overturned, then Cam Hayes may lose a year. I just don't understand. It's like, I think, Kyle, I'm going to pass it to you. I think that the NCAA loves being a heel, like a wrestling term. I just don't understand.
I haven't been keeping up with the story. I heard Cam Hayes was eligible yesterday, so I'm really not at liberty to speak on this one any sense. But it sounds like you're
2 weeks.
What is the temporary restraining order?
So the Josh Stein, the Attorney General of North Carolina, joined a whole bunch of attorney generals in the nation. They got together. They sued the NCAA over the two-time rule, meaning that the second time you transfer, you have to sit out a year.
Okay.
And so what happened is yesterday a judge gave a temporary restraining order for 2 weeks, saying that these people that, like Cam Hayes, they're in that limbo of wanting to play now, but yet it's the second time they've transferred, that they could play for 2 weeks while they're and without penalty. And now all of a sudden it's changed that. So it's just,
It won't hold up. You can't penalize. You can't penalize kids for doing what they're told they can do. And then take that, you know, if it doesn't hold up, I don't see how they'll lose their year of eligibility. I don't see how that'll be allowed. I mean, the NCAA has just as a whole, as an entity, they're just completely, utterly useless. You're sitting here, you know, worried about dumb bullshit about players transferring twice.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, we're in a betting war to try to get a quarterback where we're having to pay over $100,000. I mean, the plot has been lost. It really has. I mean, college athletics are becoming a joke, and one of my favorite things on earth, but they're becoming when you get to the point now where you can almost look and say that the professional sports are, you didn't like them because of what they were. College sports is becoming even worse with the money involvement. It's stupid.
Now
you're passing a rule for 2 weeks, and it may or may not happen because of a lawsuit, and then you're threatening to take players' eligibility away because of the NCAA, it's just a lost cause.
The athletic directors, no, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Kyle, but to your point, the athletic directors really need to man up and
band
together and voice their opinions on this, because people need to call out the NCAA, because it really is a rudderless ship at this point. But it's almost embarrassing. I've never seen a worse run organization before.
Look at David Hackman.
Yeah, David's right.
NCAA is about as credible as WWE.
Yeah, I'll go one further. They're about as credible as AEW.
Oh, man. I tell you what, guys, if you want to call in tonight, you can. About Pirate basketball, we got some football news, obviously. Not about the quarterback, but maybe, just maybe, Hauser will be an early Christmas gift. Transfer from Michigan State, we'll see about that. But guys, that very thing of, if you're a kid like Cam Hayes and you've been practicing and practicing and practicing, and then you're told yesterday you can play, and then he with advice of his lawyer, said that, go ahead and play, and he plays tonight, and he will get... let's see here. That restraining order will stop. He will be able to play 2 games. He plays on next Wednesday night in Greenville, Delaware State. But then the December 29th game is 1 day after that two-week temporary restraining order. So he won't be able to play but 2 games. So you mean to tell me, and I'm not trying to make a whole show out of this, but you mean to tell me that 2 games is a season? I mean, essentially, that's what...
That's not going to happen.
I agree with you, though. I don't think so.
And I think it'll probably get upheld anyway, where guys are allowed to play.
But this whole deal now where we're having to sue them... And by the way, Kyle, I was saying in the green room, didn't the NCAA learn, guys, about... And for our great listeners and viewers, they got... their butt beat in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court doesn't agree on anything. They lost 9-0.
In general, I am in favor of not allowing guys to transfer twice in a row. In general, to be honest with you, I I think we need to reel in a lot of this crap. But you can't be messing with people's eligibility because of a lawsuit. And because of restraining orders, what I'm trying to say. In general, I don't disagree with that rule. As a rule, I'd like to see a lot more rules put in place. Like, can we put a cap on some of this paying players?
Well, that's one of the things that I'd like to see is William Landon says the NCAA has no accountability, zero leadership. Thank you, William. I'll tell you another thing I would say, Charlie Baker. You keep coming up with stupid ideas and this kind of nonsense you're doing now with one day saying one thing and not, or whoever's saying it from the NCAA, he's the top dude. We're going to fire you. The AD, when you were talking earlier about the ADs having some guts, having some balls, I'll say it. Then tell him he's going to be fired if he does this crazy mess of coming up with these crazy proposals. Then you have this. It's just totally ridiculous, and he's appeasing, I know, the SEC. But anyway, let's talk. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, just back to the game real quick, guys. It was very frustrating tonight because the entire game, it was really just a game of runs. Like, we would get the game down to 2 or 3 points.
Yeah.
And right when we had a chance to either tie or go ahead, they would go on a little mini run. They'd get like an N1 or hit a three, and then go back up six. And there were a few times in that game where we got it to, I think we got it to, it was definitely two or three.
Yep.
And Florida goes on a mini run, and I think they got it back up to nine quick. I mean, within like one minute, they had it back up to nine. Got to give credit to the guys, because every time they would go on one of those little runs, we would respond. And then trim back into the lead, but we just couldn't get over that hump. We couldn't take the lead at any point in the game.
We never led.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just going to say we never led, but yet it just the great thing about Kyle. The great thing about this team, and you make a great point, Matt, is the fight in this team. They never give up. How many times we watch Pirate basketball, and we get excited about a marquee matchup like Florida, South Carolina being SEC opponents, and we start out good, and then all of a sudden the team goes on a run, and we just lie down, and all of a sudden it becomes an 18, 20, 25-point win for that team.
Well, I think
– we don't have that.
I think it's like – I think it's a lot to do with what I said last year about Schwartz. He really gets his guys to play together as a team. They really buy into what he's doing. Plus, I just think we're pretty talented. I think our starters are as good as anybody together in the American. Maybe we not have the depth of some teams, particularly an SEC school, but I think Schwartz gets his guys to play together too. I genuinely think we're just talented.
I tell you what, my favorite player is Ezra. Man, Asar is like, they couldn't, Matt, did you see that? And Bubba, did you see with Ezra, they would not, they didn't have an answer for Ezra. I mean, I know he's not perfect, but I whatever we are paying him NIL-wise, we can get a lot of cash for him, because teams are going to come calling after this year.
Yeah, him taking guys off the dribble and,
yeah,
unfortunately, a couple times didn't finish the way he can there at the rim. And then another time, I guess maybe it was early second half, you remember it was a screen and roll there at about the free throw line or just above the free throw line, Matt, and Ezra, caught the pass and jammed it with two hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And, he's at his best when he's in attack mode and he's driving to the basket, physical. I thought, we talked about some of the bad calls in this game. I thought there was a play in the last 4 minutes there where he was coming down on a fast break. He was trying to dunk it, and I thought he got fouled hard. And I thought that was another missed call. But, I think for Ezra, once he could just clean up those turnovers a little bit, he's a little turnover prone when he puts the ball on the floor. If he can clean that up a little bit, he is very explosive and he's strong. And like Kyle says, athletically, I mean, he is the type of guy athletically that can play in any conference. I mean, he's that talented. But he's just got to, just keep working. But he's got the ability.
Yeah, four turnovers on the night for Ezra out of our 12.
And they did had 18, right?
Yeah, the Gators had 18. And while we're on the numbers, I'll go ahead and we'll go through the team statistics. Pirates, despite shooting less than 40% from the floor, 39.7, 25 out of 63, had an opportunity to win it. 7 out of 22 from 3, 31.8, 8 out of 12 from the line. And then you have Florida, 25 out of 60, 41.7. It'd be interesting to see what their field goal percentage was the last 30 minutes when they only scored 47 points over the last, essentially 30 minutes of the game. 5 out of 20 from 3, just 25%. 15 out of 28, 53.6 from the charity stripe. And then, as we mentioned earlier, the Gators have been hammering the opposition.
That's the key right there.
On the glass, and they did so once again, out-rebounding the Pirates 51-32. Wow. 12 assists for Florida, 7 for East Carolina, 18 turnovers, as Dave mentioned, for the Gators, 12 for the Pirates. But if you look at those numbers and, you know, you see you shot less than 40%, Florida gets to the line 16 times more than you, and then they out-rebound you by 19, you still had a chance to win the game. That's got to make you. Brother. And granted, they only made 15 out of 28, but still, that's got to make you feel pretty good that playing nowhere near as well as you can play, you still had an opportunity to win the game. And yes, Florida had a lot to do with that, but there were also plenty of plays that we just didn't finish.
I was going to ask you guys that very thing, Bubba. I know, Matt, you said it. Bubba, you said it. It's frustrating how many layups we missed tonight. And you finish a few more of those. And obviously, Matt, you remember there was a time where, you know, we're down like four. That would have cut the game to two. Instead, they go down. They make a bucket, like it's a 4-point swing. The two that we don't make and the two that they make, and that kind of stuff is razor thin. You were talking about, you made a great point too, by the way, of we had that trouble on the football, on the gridiron, guys finding a way to win ball games, and we're finding that rolling over to basketball in that we're so close to winning basketball games, and especially I was hoping to be able to talk guys about this being the first road victory. We haven't really played the second game we've played on the road, but we played much better tonight than we did the first road game against George Mason.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to your point, Dave, about, you know, a lot of the missed layups and missed shots at the rim, Florida's length had a lot to do with that because they are a long team. They have a lot of size. They were obviously much, you know, the much bigger team. I think they gave us a lot of problems at the rim tonight. But some of those we should have finished, you know, and we just couldn't make those plays. But, you know, all in all, when you think about the disparity in size,
right.
You know, I thought our guys did a pretty good job, but, just couldn't quite finish. And then, you know, I thought Felton, I thought down the stretch a little bit, I thought he was kind of forcing some things, instead of kind of letting the game come to him right. and being patient, I thought he started to force some things a little bit there.
Another area that Florida really had the edge was fast break points, and Gators are excellent in transition. And some ill-advised shots, some live ball turnovers, and that led to Florida having a 20-4 edge in fast break points. And then that was something that, you know, throughout the game, just like, it's like, you got to be kidding me. Like sometimes, like, be it the long rebound or, you know, silly pass, even though we had 12 turnovers, which is not terrible. That's not a bad number. But the ones that we had were killers. And
right.
And so it's just, hopefully we'll clean that up.
Yeah. Yeah, and Kyle made a great point earlier in the show. The two games we have left, Delaware State on Wednesday night, and then we have the holiday break with Christmas. We come back on Friday the 29th at 7, and Minji's with East Tennessee State. So Delaware State, East Tennessee State, we got to get those. Are two must wins, especially when we're stuck on six. We have six wins, and we need a big victory that would put us up to 8-5 on the 8-5 for the non-conference.
And then you have another conference play with Florida Atlantic.
Yeah.
Yeah, another good point there. So we got to get as many wins. And historically, guys, we're pretty bad in the conference with conference play, so I don't think that'll be the case this year, but every win you can get at home at Menji's is huge.
Yeah, the tallest task in league play right out of the gate. But yeah, tonight, a couple other points, as far as what Matt was mentioning concerning the size differential in Florida having this the significant advantage there. You saw Sear Malonga get the start, and Sear did some nice things tonight. He had the follow dunk. Also, I think had yeah, one other basket in 13 minutes, 4 points and three rebounds for Sear. And I was encouraged with the way he battled in there with the Florida bigs. And then also there in the second half, after we had gotten killed in the paint in the first 20 minutes, you saw Brandon Johnson playing in front of Tyrese Samuel for Florida, and we had some success with that. He was able to deflect some passes, and that led to some opportunities for the Pirates.
Yeah, I think we're doing defensively. We're doing a really good job trapping. I think the trapping we're doing is really helping. Like, if you look what we were doing tonight, we were trying to, when guys had the ball on the wing, when the Florida players had the ball on the wing, we were playing them so that they would try to put the ball on the floor and go to the sideline, towards the sideline where the trap would come. And I thought that gave them some problems tonight. And, but yeah, I mean, considering the size differential, I mean, I thought the guys battled pretty hard. It's just, we got to find a way to not give up those offensive rebounds. I think that's one of the Achilles heel for this team, is that we just give up too many offensive rebounds, yeah. second chance baskets.
I mean,
yeah, 21 offensive rebounds for the Gators tonight.
50 overall, 51 rebounds to 32. I mean, 19 rebounds difference. I mean, that really, you know, that says a lot.
And no offensive rebound bigger than the one there in the final minutes,
the dunk
by Samuel.
Oh my God, yeah.
We were down 67-65, 20 seconds left, and Tyrese Samuel gets the rebound and dunks it. And then we came down and had the ill-advised shot coming out of the timeout when we tried to run the pick and pop three off the right wing to Brandon Johnson. But and very quickly, guys, I know before too long we'll be getting out of here, maybe transition over and discussing a little football in addition to what lies ahead for the Pirates and Hoops. But I'll run over the box score. It is now available on ESPN. Ezra Sarr in 28 minutes, 14 points, 3 rebounds, 5 out of 11 from the floor. Brandon Johnson had a double-double, 12 points, 10 rebounds. 3 out of 5 from beyond the arc. The only negative was that we didn't get him enough shot attempts. Sear Malanga, as I mentioned, 4 points, 3 rebounds in 13 minutes. RJ Felton, 14 points, 7 rebounds. So another solid performance by RJ. But as Matt mentioned, I'm sure at least a couple shots that RJ would have liked to have had back down the stretch. And then another solid outing by Bobby Pettiford, and 11 points and 5 assists. I think he may have also had 4 steals, if I'm not mistaken. And then and Bobby Pettiford was 5 out of 8 from the floor. And here's hoping that he's okay with what appeared to be maybe a knee injury.
But, yeah.
Was it a knee, Bob, or his ankle?
Maybe it was an ankle. I was mixing, and then you had Ezra also that was hobbled.
Yeah, I was wondering of that very thing of
maybe it was an ankle with Pettiford.
How much time not having Pettiford in the not making excuses?
Wasn't Pettiford, didn't he have some hamstring problems early in the season?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he had that scar tissue.
I wondered the
injury
at
Kansas. Maybe that was it.
Yeah. But,
we shall see.
I hope he's not hurt, though, because he's a huge piece. He surprised me with his ability to run the point. He's so under control. Like, he's really impressed me. He doesn't force things.
Yeah, he's good.
Under control. He runs the offense, Kyle, and then he gets a grit when he needs to. He can really take it to the basket hard. I mean, I just hope he's not hurt. Kyle, I didn't mean to cut you off there. What were you going to say?
I just said he's good. I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah, he's.
Yes, reminds me of a lot for longtime Pirate fans that were around. I say long time, folks that were following Pirate basketball back 15 plus years ago, or so, with Brock Young. Right? Yeah. He reminds me some of Brock Young. He's stronger than Brock in the a little more physical, perhaps, but some of his game and just the way he takes command, you know, he's a true point guard in every sense of the word, has a feel for it, as Matt says, knows when to push it and knows when to back things out and run the half court sets. But you have Cam Hayes. When I heard that he was going to play tonight, I thought we'd probably see him, you know, 12 to 15 minutes. Cam Hayes, 25 minutes. No, not a good game from a statistical standpoint, just 1 out of 9. The good news is that you could tell Cam's been there before, no hesitation whatsoever to take shots, despite having gone probably 0 for 7 up to that point there with 3 minutes left when we were down, I want to say 3 or 4 points. He knocked down a big jump shot from just beyond the free throw line. And then obviously, he's going to do nothing but get better. Just fingers crossed that he'll be able to continue to play beyond that Delaware State game. And then you had Jaden Walker in 24 minutes off the bench, knocked down a pair of threes, and finished with 8 points and 2 rebounds. So there you have the numbers. Quentin DeBouche tonight.
I was going to ask about him.
Yeah, only 5 minutes for Quentin. That's certainly a season low, and he did not score in those 5 minutes.
Yeah, he hasn't, Matt, he hasn't looked good in the last, I hate to say that because he's a college player, but he hasn't looked like himself the last 2 or 3 games. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but we'll see how what do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think he's still finding his way. I mean, he's inconsistent with his perimeter shooting, I think, at this stage. Like he kind of struggles from behind the arc a little bit. I think his natural game is he's a slasher. You know, he's a slasher type where, you know, you want to get him to the rim a little bit and finish at the rim. I think he's got ability, but it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, he's definitely got a lot of potential.
And then speaking of trying to finish at the rim, Jaden Walker that time on the break tried to throw one down, and the big freshman Condon
that kid
blocked it for Florida. And
love to have him, huh?
And for the Gators, Walter Clayton Jr., the Iona transfer, opting to come home to the state of Florida, I think from right there. I don't know if he's either from Lakeland or not too far from Lakeland. The announcers tonight on the SEC Network referenced it. And I'm just saying that, yeah, he opted to do that as opposed to going to St. John's and playing for Rick Pitino as he had at Iona. But Walter Clayton Jr. finished with 22 points, and 20 of those came in the first, 14 minutes of the game or something?
Yeah. Yeah, he was the only player at halftime. He was the only player for both teams in double figures. So,
and he led the Gators with those 22 points. And then also for Florida, you had Tyrese Samuel, who had the big putback dunk there. And in the final 20 seconds, he finished with 11 and 7. You had Richard with 10 and 7. And then Pulling one of their talented guards and had 11 and 4. Condon, that I referenced, that had the big block on Jaden Walker, had 8 points and 12 rebounds.
Yeah, well, it's
do we want to? I don't know how much time we got here, guys. Do we want to talk about the football staff hires?
Yes, that was part of the plan tonight. As both we know now. Our tight ends coach, and we have a running back coach, right, Bubba?
Yeah, we do. Obviously, coming up from Ole Miss, and like Kyle referenced earlier, not surprised to see John David Baker going with someone he's familiar with, and that being Hunter McKay. He was on the staff at Ole Miss. I believe he had been a GA there, perhaps
an analyst, right?
An analyst at some point as well. But Hunter McKay will be joining the ECU offensive staff coaching the tight ends.
Yeah, so, and also Rodney Freeman, by the way, has the ties to he's a little bit older than JDB, but he has the ties to Abilene Christian. I think he graduated in 2009, a few years ahead of JDB. So
yeah, the running backs coach was a good hire. Where did he come from?
Utah State, right?
Yes, correct. That's right. And
okay, I'd seen that speculation. When was that? When did that break and become official? I'd missed lunch, that.
Like it was Pirate Radio posted it earlier today.
Yeah, it's lunchtime. I can't remember exactly, but lunchtime right at thereafter.
So the running backs coach, very good hire there. What is his name again?
Rodney Freeman the second.
Rodney Freeman. Yeah.
Freeman comes over from Utah State, where their running game was really good this year. And these guys, you know, and if you look at the offense Blake Harrell runs, it is very similar to the offense that
Blake Anderson.
Who did I say? Blake Harrell. The offense that Blake Anderson runs at Utah State is very similar to Seth Luttrell's offense,
right?
Which JDB coached in. So it's all about speed and tempo. So he's fit. He's hiring guys that fit in with what he wants to do. So I like the staff that we're putting together on offense. Now we just got to get some pieces to play with.
Yeah, and by the way, guys, another thing that I like is with JDB is they vary the tempo. There will be times when they run the tempo, like the tempo is up tempo, and then they can kind of slow it down a little bit. And just when you think that you got it figured out, then they switch the tempos, and that really keeps the defense honest. I've been really impressed. The more that I read about John David Baker, the more, you know, and I told everybody, hey, I would like to have Chad Morris, but I think that JDB has the potential to be a home run. And if you're Mike Houston and you're 2-10, you got to swing for the fences.
Yeah, and the Michigan State kid is visiting this weekend. You know, he started the last seven games for them at quarterback, put up decent numbers on a very bad football team. A lot of times when you first read about Hauser, you'll see him as Michigan State's backup. He was to start the season, but he started the last seven games. The starter got benched. The starter got benched, and he's the one that just signed with Coastal. So, Hauser. It'll be interesting to see if we get him. I think it would be a good choice. You guys, Bubba, Dave, Matt, do you guys think we could get Hauser and Keys?
I mean, that would
that's
be
my a hope. That's my hope.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Matt.
I mean, I think it's possible.
You didn't like what you saw, did you, last night, Matt?
I wasn't overly impressed with Keys last night, you know, but I think his team was severely outmatched. This is the junior college national championship we're referring to. Right. I actually like the quarterback. I was saying to Bubba, I like the quarterback better from Western Iowa? Is that who it was, Bubba? I can't even remember who's the other team that won. I'm not big on the junior college teams, but anyway, I was more impressed with the other team's quarterback, but I would give him a look. But I think Hauser is the first domino that needs to fall. If you can get him, all right, if you can get him this weekend to commit, now maybe you can solidify those wide receiver commitments. Now maybe you can solidify an offensive tackle. People start to get excited. But, man, how great would you guys feel coming out of this weekend if you had his commitment?
That'd be great. We got to get the NIL money together. I don't know what kind of offer we're getting together on the table. Hopefully, we got some young ladies that are paying him some attention this weekend. Need to pull out. You laugh. I'm being serious.
I know you are. I'm laughing because you're telling the truth.
Pull out all the stops from cash to chicks. Give them a limousine, ride them around town. I mean, at this point, you just do whatever you want to do. I mean,
there is no. It's a wild, wild west.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Make him feel welcome. Show him a good time in Greenville. Show him the money. I don't know where else he has planned to visit, but if we could get him to commit this weekend, that would be humongous.
I make a prediction. I will say by tomorrow night, we'll sign him.
Are you basing that on anything?
I haven't heard anything, although his parents came. I think that's a good sign. There's just little pieces to the puzzle. I know that it may be a stretch to put together.
It could be that the NIL deal has already been put together, and that's what got him here. So now he's going to see if he wants to be here.
And Bubba said that he tweeted out a pirate flag, right, Bubba? Am I wrong?
Yeah, he did. He did. I saw that.
Yeah. Earlier tonight, yeah, he tweeted out the Jolly Roger emoji. A little bit more about our new running back coach, Rodney Freeman. And Kyle referenced his time this year, his lone season on Blake Anderson's staff at Utah State. Prior to that, in 2022, he was an offensive analyst for Mel Tucker at Michigan State. And prior to joining the Spartans.
Interesting.
Yeah, prior to joining the Spartans, he was an OC at the D2 level for Colorado Mesa. So, I thought that was interesting to see that he had been an OC in the past.
Our line coach, he was OC at McNeese at one point.
Yeah, he's been. That sounds great.
And then, as Kyle mentioned, Utah State was very effective running the ball this year, in addition to just being a solid all-around offense, averaging nearly 450 yards per game, and then running for more than 185 yards per game.
And it's all about tempo. So, again, it fits exactly what he wants to do.
Hey, Matt, by the way, and Bubba and Kyle, with our schedule next year, with the pieces that we've already had as far as assembling at coaching, I know we've got to get the dudes now, but don't you guys feel like we can have a winning season and go back bowling?
It's going to depend on what we can get on offense. I mean, right now, no. Not now. We can have the greatest coaches in the world. We don't have anything on offense to win with. If we get the pieces, absolutely. The schedule sets up nicely. If we keep Blake Harrell and the defense together, if we can get Hauser or another quality quarterback, and we can get a couple good receivers and quite a few offensive linemen, definitely we should be bowling next year. I mean, the schedule's manageable. I won't call it easy. A lot of people say it's easy. You know, Liberty is in a New Year's Six bowl. Appalachian State played for the Sun Belt Championship. So I won't call it easy. Old Dominion's in a bowl game. And then you got the conference schedule. I like our schedule next year. That's a topic for a different day, but just talk about our schedule for next year as a whole. But, yeah, to answer your question, Dave, yes, we definitely have the coach. We're putting together a good offensive coaching staff that if they can get the pieces in place,
right?
That yes, we should be able to turn it around next year and go to a bowl.
Yeah. And we haven't talked real quick, guys, speaking of the schedule, what did you guys think about, I know that it would be great if we can meet Matt Semenza up at West Point as they announced the schedule for
absolutely
opponents. I really want to go to that game. I do too,
particularly if it's in October. I'd love to go to West Point.
Guys, it is a beautiful place to visit in October.
You played there, didn't you, Matt?
I did, yeah, many years ago. Yeah. And really, really cool stadium too. You know, you have the cadets, and you know, it's a great environment, and it is a perfect fall destination on the Hudson River. It's in the mountains a little bit, and
Mikey Stadium.
Yeah. Really, really cool. But I would definitely recommend it if you guys can make the trip.
How far is that? That's upstate New York, right?
Is that from here or from him?
Well, I mean, both.
About an eight and a half hour drive if traffic's right from here. And then Matt can tell you how far it is from him. I will
guess two and a half.
It's maybe 2 hours from me. I wouldn't even classify it as upstate. I would say it's, you know.
Okay.
It's about an hour and 15 outside of Manhattan.
Oh, is that
close? That far. Yeah, it's not like up near like Buffalo or anything like that. It's
right. I knew it wasn't there, but yeah, I didn't know it. But I didn't know it was that close to New York State, New York City, rather.
Yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to say, guys, looking back to Hauser, like I always try to put myself in the shoes of these recruits, and like, I'm speculating, but I'm guessing he didn't know a lot about East Carolina, and the thing that we have that, you know, as a program, one of our best selling points is the town of Greenville and the environment, mm-hmm. and the fact that this is a pure college town, and I'm guessing when he got here with his parents, he probably didn't really know what to expect, and all of a sudden he gets into Greenville, he's like, man, this is a college town. And then he gets to the stadium and he's like, hey, they have a beautiful stadium, you know. And I think,
where's he from?
California.
Yeah, he's
okay.
So, but my point is, you know, this is one of our best selling points. You get people in Greenville, you show them the college environment that we have. And the key with him is just, if he leaves here without committing, that would make me very concerned. You're probably not going to get him. So you got to get that commitment while he's here.
Exactly.
This is an impressive place, and you got to use what you have as far as selling points.
And I was glad to see Jared Plummer in the at ECU Jungle account on X posting at Caton Hauser a clip from last year's NC State game. It was when Holton had connected with CJ Johnson for that touchdown pass, the first touchdown of the game. Going toward the Boneyard, and the crowd just going nuts. So, well done by Jared there, letting Caton see the atmosphere at Dowdy Ficklin.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at right now with the schedule for next year. You take that offense for JDB and company, and then you have Blake Harrell on defense. The defense is pretty mad. We haven't lost anybody else. It's basically two starters, right? Off the top of my head.
Correct.
And every day, hey, Matt, this is like a tournament with Blake Harrell on the defense. I'm going to call it Survive in Advance. We've made it another day. It's December 13th, 14th, rather. And we have December 14th, and we still have them intact. Pretty much. So I'm excited about that. If we can somehow, some way keep that, then we'll be golden.
Hey, and get this, some degenerate named Pirate Ghost on HTC wants to know if Hauser's mom is hot.
If Hauser's mom is hot?
Who's yeah.
Pirate Ghost? Oh, I
know. Yeah. I don't know what's wrong with this.
He's Pirate trash, Ghost. Man. Pirate what? Ghost is trash. Is Hauser's mom hot? I mean, what kind of trash would write something like that? Some milf hunting weirdo.
And I don't want to say the name of that song because Bubba will get mad at me. But remember the song Stacy's Mom Has Got It Going On?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great song.
And Bubba will get mad at you because he hates that band.
Okay. But with next year, with the schedule, with I do believe they're going to be great talent in with the O-line coach. My understanding, he's by the way, Matt, the O-line coach is supposed to be really, really good at recruiting. So I want you to put a watch there on the O-line coach about, because you give straight up cred when it comes to talent evaluation and watching film on the O-line, because tell me again how many you want. Is it five? Five to seven O-linemen?
Five minimum for me. I would like to see seven or eight guys.
No doubt. All right, guys, do you have anything? I know we've got a couple minutes left of the
just briefly touch on schedule changes. We decided we didn't want to play Boise State because, why would you want national exposure playing the likes of Boise State? It's just idiotic to do something like that. We're not going to play Boise State anymore. I hear we're going to replace them with Delaware. Delaware's moving up to FBS, so that's probably the plan, to replace them with Delaware, maybe Kennesaw, perhaps School for the Blind. One of those three will probably be who we'll replace Boise with. And then
Coastal Carolina.
I know it's going to be Coastal Carolina. I'm being a smartass.
I know.
and then the Marshall game for 25.
That really hurts.
Was canceled. That was our choice. It was at Marshall. So I don't know that it really hurt us. We made the choice. We played BYU and NC State that year.
I thought they didn't want to play that game though, didn't they? The AD for basically what it is, the AD
for who didn't want to play what game?
Marshall, the Marshall AD.
Well, then, Marshall owed us a game in Greenville,
and we owed them a game.
Correct. And so the game's not going to be played. So it'll be interesting to see. They give us a road game for 25. There's some speculation that we may play a neutral site game with South Carolina. If we drop that Marshall game to play that neutral site game with South Carolina in 25, then it's complete genius. But it'll be interesting to see who we replace Marshall with in 25. Yeah.
So basically, Matt, listen to me, Kyle. I heard that, I don't know if you guys heard this, but I heard that the situation with Marshall is they've had to drop East Carolina because they need money for the athletic department, and they're replacing the two East Carolina games with bye games. That's what I was told. I heard.
Yeah, I have no idea.
That's what John Gilbert said in the interview. I mean, he said
that, okay, he did it. Okay.
Yeah, he said that they needed a bye game.
So what are we going to do to replace – what's the plan to replace the Marshall game?
We'll have another FCS opponent.
we can't. We can't play two FCS opponents.
I'm joking.
So will we do a bye game? Are we going to look for a home and home? I mean, you know, we play NC State and BYU that year, so we really don't need another tough opponent. So, you know, could somebody like Delaware that's just moving up be somebody we try to do a home and home with? NC State and BYU to me is, you know, with the new playoff format, who knows how good we'll be in 25, but if you got BYU and NC State on the schedule, I wouldn't schedule a tough game. You're out of the Marshall game now for whatever reason. You know, unless you can get like a neutral site game with South Carolina, if any of those rumors are true, I would,
man, that'd be cool.
I would schedule a Delaware or somebody like that. That's just moving up to FBS because like I said, we already have NC State and BYU on the schedule.
Yeah. In that particular case, I would have no problems with that. In fact, you know, you make that great point, Kyle, is that we need to do everything we can.
Just look at Liberty as the example this year.
Horrible
schedule. They went undefeated there in the New Year Six.
If that's what it means, then I'm all for it. I mean, because we know the eight opponents we're going to be playing with a conference, so yeah, no doubt.
And that's why I understand that it's a lot of the fans that are complaining, you know, not the coaches and players, but that's what I'm been saying. That's my response. And I understand where people are coming from as far as the schedule, because
The BYU the Boise thing bothered me more than the Marshall thing, because we play NC State and BYU already that year.
Right. I mean, I was talking more specifically just as far as next year's schedule is concerned. And because my response has been, yeah, I understand where you're coming from. But the fact is, you know, that obviously App State and to a lesser degree here recently, Liberty, that they've been obviously significantly better than we have. And what we need to do is just take care of business on the field and start, you know, winning 9, 10, 11 games or more, and then we'll have a leg to stand on.
Well, Liberty, last time I checked, is playing in the New Year's Six. App State played for the Sun Belt Championship, and right. ODU is in a bowl game. Meanwhile, that's we're 2-10. I'm not defending the schedule. As far as the home schedule for next year goes, so some people bitching about it. I actually think the home schedule next year is better than this year. App State is certainly more appealing than Marshall. I much rather play Temple and Navy than pretty much any other teams in this league, just because of your regionality and history.
So
I don't necessarily mind next year's home schedule.
And how about UTSA? Yeah,
Navy's always a good draw.
UTSA is a good one.
I said Navy's always a good draw for
Navy
us.
Is a good draw. So is App. So that those should both be well attended games. you know, I would think Temple could potentially be well attended. You know, Florida Atlantic, we just beat this year. UTSA coming to town, they lost a lot. I next year's schedule overall sets up nicely if we have the pieces in place for us to have a bounce back year.
Oh yeah, whatever seats we're not buying next year for that App State game. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. You know, for them to bring 7,000 or 8,000 or something.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we got to. And that was my, by the way, guys, that was my point as far as the Boise State thing. Okay, so you have Boise State, and Matt, we were talking about this in our group chat. We've got to have our leadership. I just want to say this really fast and move on because we're at an hour right now. We have to have our leadership to believe that we are a national brand. I agree with we can't be flying all over the place and spending a lot of money. I get all that. Regional games are great because we can drive to Liberty. We can drive to ODU. The Charlotte game for us, the Eastern North Carolina, is only about a 4-hour drive. I have no issues with that. But what I do have an issue with is this small time thinking over and over and over again. The Boise State makes no sense that we should cancel that. And you look at it, Boise State, if you have Boise State on the schedule, people are going to come to that game. Now, is it going to be a sellout? Absolutely not. I don't see it being a sellout because they're not going to bring a million fans from Boise, Idaho. I get that. And I don't know how many Boise graduates are nearby. But I will tell you that when you see...
It's a good ESPN game.
Yeah, you see ECU, Boise State, two of the best group of five teams football-wise going head-to-head.
Historically.
That's what, yeah, exactly. That's what I don't mean right now, but as far as programs are concerned, that's a good matchup. And I, you know, Kyle, we've talked about this numerous times. As much as we beat up Comfer, he does a better job. I got to give him the edge as far as scheduling over
Gilbert. Yeah, I agree. I will say about the, you know, if we are really going to replace him with Coastal, I can live with that.
Coastal, I have no issues. Yeah.
Coastal's been red hot. If they continue that red hot trajectory, I would imagine that game will draw well in Greenville. So
and we get to go to Myrtle Beach.
Yeah. It'd be nice if we could just, you know, be, you know, I was thinking about this earlier. Bowl game in Myrtle Beach, two bowl games in Charlotte this year. You got Syracuse down in like a secondary American Bowl taking on USF. You got Virginia Tech in the Military Bowl, and we ain't friggin' bowl eligible. I mean, come on. We could be playing an ACC school or be playing in Charlotte or Myrtle Beach, and instead we're just it's irritating.
You know,
it hurts.
Guys, it hurts. I would love to have been a fly on the wall and know how that conversation went down between when apparently Boise approached John Gilbert to cancel that series. And I know things have changed on their end with – obviously, the situation with the Pac-12, and that, you know, they have some new challenges on their end. But listen, I'm sorry if I'm the athletic director for East Carolina and Boise approaches me and says, "Listen, we've had some things change on our end. We have some conflicts. We need to cancel this series." There is no way. I'm not here to be friends with Boise's athletic director. I'm here to look out for East Carolina.
Well, I'll tell you the real reason why.
I would have said there's no chance. I would have said, no, forget it.
Matt, you're missing the real what's really going to happen. The real reason we're canceling it. When the new Pac-20 is formed, you know, we're going to be in the same conference with Boise. So that's the real reason it was canceled.
I hope so. I hope you're right.
I love it.
I was wondering where you were going with that. But I hope you're right. I mean,
that's what it's all about. That's the real reason we canceled.
But like, don't you guys agree with me though? Like, you can't just cave in and just say, "Oh yeah, sure, no problem."
I don't think Gilbert wanted to play the damn game anyway. I think he loves regional games, and he doesn't see the advantage of playing Boise over Coastal. I think he sees it as an even trade. And you know what? You maybe can't argue now. It is an even trade. A few years ago, obviously, it wasn't. Historically, it's not. Boise's a name brand, and you know, will Boise raise their game back up to that level where they were, you know, 5 to 5, 10, 12 years ago? You know, if they don't, if they kind of stay where they are as a you know, an 8-9 win type football team, and Coastal kind of keeps their upward trajectory, then you can argue that it really, you know, you're not gaining anything by playing Boise over Coastal. But it's certainly on paper, Boise is a much bigger name brand. But in recent years, Coastal has been just as good as Boise.
Yeah, I don't have a.
I'll go ahead, Dave.
I was just gonna make a quick point. I don't have a problem. This is the thing. To me, it's not an either or, and I know what you're saying, Kyle. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. My thing is the Coastal situation. We definitely need to be playing Coastal Carolina. I think it makes perfect sense to play Coastal Carolina. So it's not like that I think they're a dud as far as putting them on the schedule. But why do you have to make an either or conversation when, Matt, you're absolutely right. You are getting paid $500,000 a year as the athletic director for East Carolina University. And, you know, I'm sorry, but it's not about burning bridges. It's about the reason why you get paid the big bucks is to represent East Carolina, and you're looking at scheduling, and the athletic director is the one that schedules football games. It's not like a basketball coach or look at Cliff Godwin. Mike Schwartz is doing an awesome job. Kim McNeil getting South Carolina to come in on December 30th for a lunch game. I mean, we've got our coaches are making good decisions on scheduling, but our football schedule, you know, and Gilbert is right to a certain extent on it is getting harder to do the P5 schools coming to Greenville. But at the same time, don't you guys believe in all your hearts that East Carolina, we always have to be creative and innovative? In the 90s, I would say no to this, what I'm getting ready to say. But I think you have to do a 2-for-1 right now.
Yeah. Depending on who's with, absolutely.
Like if it's Clemson or, I mean, they're not coming, but South Carolina, there's
South Carolina, Mississippi State, even somebody like Vanderbilt, I'd do a 2-for-1 with.
I have no problems with that.
And final thing, and I know Bubba wants to chime in on this, but final thing on the Boise, just one last thought on that is like, I think it was a tremendous success when we went out west last year against BYU.
Amen.
We got into a different time zone. We got exposure to a different audience.
Yes.
You know, why wouldn't you want to capitalize on that? And you know what? Like, people make so much out of, oh, it's a long flight across country.
It's one trip.
Give me a break. It's a modern airplane. Take a nap for 5 hours.
Was it 400 miles
an
hour?
Watch a movie. Like, people make – it's just amazing to me, the things that people make a big deal out of. I guess that's the last thing I want to say on it, but I just disagree with John Gilbert's decision. I would have pushed back on the Boise AD, and I would have simply said no.
You're going to play the damn game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob, exactly. I'm sorry. Go ahead, man.
No, you're good. The thing that's kind of stuck in my craw as far as the whole 2-for-1 rationale and, you know, why – John Gilbert wasn't crazy about doing it. It's just the way he presented it as far as, well, you know, you're on the road at their place twice and you're probably going to be a sizable underdog. Well, guess what? I mean, look
we're
at
our underdog here.
Yeah, so what if you're an underdog, if you're a sizable underdog? I mean, we weren't talking about doing a 2-for-1 with Michigan. I mean, we're talking about a 2-for-1 with people that we expect to be competitive against. I mean, it's not
Indiana.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think you got to be kidding me. I was like, so what if you go to their place and you're a 10-point or a 14-point underdog? That doesn't determine the outcome of the game.
Matt, what is the damn difference in doing a 2-for-1 with somebody and getting a home game out of it than doing 2-bye games? You're going to be underdogs of both those, and you're not going to get a home game out of it. Gilbert's problem is he does not understand who we are or what we are.
Right.
And he doesn't seem to care to. And he's been here long enough where if he ain't got it by now, he ain't never going to get it.
I'm going to do my Kyle right now. I'm going to steal your line. So I'm going to give you kudos and props. You know the problem with Gilbert, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you straight up, and I'll tell him.
I just told you.
No, I know, but I'm going to add to what you were saying.
Welfare?
Do what?
Oh, go ahead.
No, the problem with Gilbert is he's got the SEC stank Is that what you say, Kyle?
That's I probably have said that.
No, you said it with different people, but not about Gilbert. But the SEC stank, bias, whatever you want to say. Look, no, we're not Alabama. No, I get it. You've worked at Tennessee. I have no issues with that. I think it's fantastic. But you've got to understand that East Carolina, we are basically, if you want to be honest and objective, like the name of our show, we are a bubble team for the P5. We are right there neck and neck. We need leaders to be creative, innovative, scheduling. And I get that scheduling's hard, but at the same time, it's not like it's rocket science. I mean, you know, like, you pick up the damn phone and you call, like, Matt. I was going to give you a perfect example for Matt, okay? Because I'm looking out for my buddy who wants to go to more games with East Carolina. Let's do a home-and-home. I got a great idea. Let's do a home-and-home with Rutgers. Rutgers.
Well, what I want to know is, you know, and I know Coastal's coming up. Well, if we're dropping home and home with Boise because it's too far away, and now we're dropping home and home with Marshall because they need bye games, well, who in the French fry? Who are we supposed to be playing? If we're not going to play Boise, we're not going to play Marshall, who are we going to play? Bethune-Cookman? That's what I don't get. I mean, the Boise thing. You know, okay, if we're going to replace them with Coastal, all right, fine. But, you know, it's just when you announce on one day, well, we're dropping Boise and we're dropping Marshall, but we got this home game with Campbell. That don't look good, you athletic department dumbasses. And I know you're already mad at me and don't like me, but God almighty, you announce on the same day. Look, just use some common sense here, people. You announce on the same day. We're dropping Boise and we're dropping Marshall, but hey, we got a home game with Campbell. Well, that's going to excite the fan base. That's going to get us fired up. God almighty, use some common sense. Campbell, at least when you're going to make things public, how about could you not wait? Could you not get in a room and get a discussion together? Could we not wait until the Coastal thing was official to announce that we're dropping the Boise series? So, you know, hey, we're dropping Boise because Boise don't want to play us, but we got this home and home with Coastal. Well, you announced that we're dropping Boise and Marshall, but hey, we got added a home game with Campbell. I mean, my God.
What?
Campbell?
What?
Yeah, is that the level we're at now? I mean, seriously, like this conference we're in is significant.
That was another thing I was going to – go ahead, Matt. Brutal. I was going to add to that.
We've essentially dropped down to a lesser conference. We have. I mean, that's just the reality of it. Not by choice, but with all
it's
the
Conference
movement,
USA, basically.
Yeah. I mean, this is not a good conference anymore. And so, you know, but then you go out and you drop Marshall, you drop Boise, and, oh, but we got – to Kyle's point, we got Campbell. Nobody cares about Campbell. I'm sorry. Nobody cares.
Right.
And our situation, this isn't baseball. This isn't baseball.
And basketball and baseball is the only thing we care about with Campbell. I mean, right. We have a history. We have a really good – one of our big rivalries in the state with baseball and basketball over the years.
They're FCS and football. It doesn't have to be explained. I mean, they're FCS and football. But the bottom line is, look, I just go back to presentation. If you got a home-and-home with Coastal coming to replace the Boise thing, can we not wait to announce it once we have that official? So at least you have that. Hey, look, Boise didn't want to play us. It's a long trip anyway. But we got this home and home with Coastal. We think it's just as good, and they'll actually bring fans here. But instead, we announce, hey, we're dropping this and we're dropping that, but we added Campbell.
We know when you talk about regional rivalries, when you look at, speaking of Conference USA, we have ODU. There's ACC, SEC.
ODU's in the Sun Belt.
That's not what I said?
You said Conference USA.
I'm sorry. They used to be, Sun Belt. I was getting ready. Yeah, Sun Belt. Conference
Liberty's in Conference USA.
Conference
and
USA.
And now Delaware is joining. And so we will have multiple regional teams in Conference USA.
Right. But my point is there's like the regional games. Okay, you have that formula. And like Kyle made a point, let's schedule if you have a weak opponent in FBS, great, fantastic, regional, fantastic. But there's teams out there, Big Ten teams, SEC teams, ACC teams that are middle of the pack or the lower part. And hey, speaking of a team that we have history with in the ACC, Syracuse, home and home. There's teams out there that will play us. They will play us.
Yeah, well, to me, like the 25 schedule, and we'll get out of here. If you replace Marshall with, say, a Delaware, now you got NC State, BYU. You got two good Power 5 schools that are beatable. And then you got an FCS and hopefully an easy FBS, a group of five.
Right.
And to me, that's a perfect schedule. Two Power 5 opponents that are winnable, an easy group of five, and an FCS.
And Matt, to your point with you were talking about East Carolina being a nine. We need to be a solid nine-win team every single year. And the thing about that, guys, is I said that once before. After we got done with that show and you talked about that, Matt, it got me thinking about the very fact of that means if you're a nine-win football team, you're most likely going to be in the championship game or fighting for a championship. And that's what we expect at East Carolina. So, you know, when you're talking about Kyle, we don't want – nobody's saying that we have to play Murder's Row for sure.
Well, eight, nine, ten-win team is what we want to be on a regular basis. You know, we got to build back there next year. You know, my expectations are just to get back to a bowl game next year and then build from there. I know some people feel we need to do better than that based on the schedule. I think there's a lot of variables to look at for that. But
it all depends on the dudes we get. Like you talked about this.
There's a lot of variables. I know 6-6 good enough for next year's schedule? Well, if we start off 2-4 and then we win we went like four straight in the season and the offense suddenly starts clicking, you know, maybe the offense starts off slow and then, you know, we win 4 or 5 in a row to end the year. So yeah, that's 6-6. You definitely aren't going to make a change. I know that question wasn't asked. It was just on my mind. But anyway, yeah, we'll a lot of time talk about football. Bowl games start this weekend. Got a lot to watch with recruiting, but
Well, this year, like we did with Houston coming here, guys, we got to sell hope. And I think I feel much better. I don't know about you guys, but my final thought is I feel much better about the football program now than I did, obviously, after the end of the season. So
based on the hires, yes, but we got to get the Jimmies and Joes.
Right. Right. Just based on right now where we are without the recruiting class as far as high school.
Yeah, and one more thing I do want to mention about football, then I'm done. Found it very, very odd and wondered if it had any connection. Trip Weaver becomes the defensive coordinator at Austin Peay, then Mason Garcia transferred to Austin Peay. I wonder if that was just coincidental or if there was any connection there.
Oh, I'm certain, Kyle, that he brought him, you know, that he opened their eyes to Mason Garcia, and I'm certain that was
You're on point there, Kyle.
I would definitely think so, Matt. But
interesting to see how Mason does at the FCS level if he can be reborn and play quarterback at that level.
But I want to look to see what Austin Peay's plans are from an offensive standpoint. You know, if they're going to do something, maybe perhaps similar to what Jacksonville State does, and interested to see how
who's the head coach how they intend
on using Mason. Say it again.
Who's the head coach over there now?
They just made a new hire. I'm looking up his name right now.
Okay. One time I know the guy that was the interim head coach at Southern Miss a couple of years ago was
Jeff Ferris.
I don't know him.
And in just a moment I'll tell you his background.
Matt, do you have anything while Bubba's looking that up before we go?
No, I'm all good, fellas. Just big thing, just final thought on basketball tonight is we've played two very competitive games against the SEC this week, had a chance to win both. Just don't take a step backwards from here.
Please, yeah.
You know, you're playing at a pretty high level. Keep it at this level. Don't take a step backwards and have any bad losses. Who do we play next? Is it Delaware State?
Yes. Let's
go out. Let's go out in that game and take care of business and
struggle.
Make sure you stay at this level.
Put this up really quick. JR said we went from number 204 and KenPom to 186 after the Florida game. So thank you, JR. I wanted to make sure we gave you credit for that, and for the viewers and listeners, for them to know that.
In that next game with Delaware State, the Hornets are 6-7, and that game will be played next Wednesday, December 20th. Looking over their schedule, let's see, their wins came at Grambling State, at Bethune-Cookman, at Chicago State, at Loyola Maryland, and then a couple of non-D1 wins. They do, prior to playing the Pirates, they travel to Wake Forest next Monday night before coming to Greenville on Wednesday.
So, yeah, we need to play up to our potential and not to our opponent's potential and blow them out.
Let's do it.
No doubt. Need to come out and have a substantial win and carry some momentum into that 9-day break there. Won't play again until December 29th against East Tennessee State. And as far as Jeff Ferris is concerned, he is coming to Austin Peay from UCLA. He was the Bruins tight ends coach.
Okay.
And prior to that, though, he had in 2021, so he had been at UCLA the last 2 years. But prior to that, after playing at Duke from 2008 to 2011 as a safety, 2 years as a GA for the Blue Devils, 3 years as a wide receiver coach in 2017. He also had a co-coordinator role, outside receivers coach and tight ends and outside receivers coach from 18 to 20. And then 2021, he became co-OC and quarterbacks coach. So, interesting hire there by the Governors. And I think he's made a solid hire for his defensive coordinator in Trip Weaver. Tripp had, of course, been named the defensive coordinator at Western Carolina before opting to return to his alma mater and join Mike Houston's staff. So definitely will continue to follow Tripp's career as well as keep an eye on who his replacement's going to be. We've heard of some
good names,
tremendous possibilities. A couple of former
defensive coordinator,
defensive coordinators in the ACC.
And a former Pirate.
Damon Magazoo. So credit to Steve and I go there reporting that news.
Any of those three, I'd be extremely excited with.
And those were three of the five that Steve and I go mentioned on hoistthecolors.net. And obviously Mags on that staff at UNLV that's just done an unbelievable job. Barry Odom and company looking to win a 10th game in the bowl game. I'm trying to remember who they play, Kansas.
That's right.
In the bowl game there at Chase Field, the Diamondbacks Stadium.
It's going to be great to see how things play out. By the way, guys, maybe we'll see if we can do a show on Sunday night, if there's any kind of news for us. Plus, we've got the bowls that we can be talking about, but we'll see how that all plays out. I know our schedules are kind of tough. Sometimes for even the four of us to get together, but we'll see how that'll be TBA for sure.
Yeah, we got to get a Christmas special in sometime between now and Christmas, and
for sure,
Madison Christmas carols for us.
By the way, I heard
we can break down the just a quick idea. Break down maybe the best Christmas movies, and then in addition to that.
Best Christmas
songs. The worst Christmas song
is easy. 12 Days of Christmas.
That's your worst? Hey, by the way,
how about this for a fact? You know the song by Brenda Lee?
Yeah, it went to number one after 60 years. Yeah.
Isn't that
Can
crazy?
You believe that, Kyle? I mean, that's.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. And it's the power of TikTok song. And songs going viral.
But Kyle, when was that song released? I mean, that song
in the 50s.
Late 50s, 57, 58. I'll have to look that up. But
Brenda Lee was 13 when it came out, or 11 or 12 or 2.
She's in her 70s now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty remarkable story.
Oh, it is. It's a great story. It is.
1950. I was right. 1958.
That will always be a classic.
You're right. You're right, Johnny Gardner.
Thank you, Johnny. Yeah, Johnny joins us via satellite sometimes.
Rocking around the Christmas tree. So we're going to do top 10 favorite Christmas movies. And are we going to include specials in those, like Rudolph and Frosty?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So top 10 favorite Christmas specials or movies. And then top 5 worst Christmas songs?
What about Overplayed in there? Because I like the song, I do like the song, but how many times have I already heard, I don't know about you guys, but Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You, like I hear it over and over and over again.
Yeah, screw that song. I don't like that song. But it's not.
It's not a bad song. It's just played too much.
12 Days of Christmas is horrible. It's horrible.
Not even the Muppets? You didn't like it when you were a kid?
I've always hated it because it's stupid. Who wants that crap? Why are they giving them so many birds? There's a partridge in a pear tree, 2 turtle doves. Geese are laying. I mean, who wants all these damn birds?
See, this is when one of the
apparently an App State too. Apparently an App State fan that's coming after Johnny Gardner. That's who wants all those birds.
I don't get that, but okay.
Kyle is at his best when he's
Johnny gets it because of the game at Bank of America. Yeah.
Okay.
An App State fan. I'm trying to remember the comment to Johnny, and Johnny came back with a double burn.
Okay. When am I at my best, Matt?
When you're like when we bring up just random topics like this, like
yeah, you're right, Matt.
I mean, and you just have the ability to go free form for lack of a better term, freestyle. It's pure entertainment. So I'm looking forward to this one.
And by the way, can I ask you guys a question?
Maybe we should get Stevie for that one too.
Stevie would be really good. By the way, this is a debate always. Movies like Die Hard, even though
Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
And I don't know why people. I agree with you, Kyle. I don't know.
It's just based at Christmas. It just happens to be at Christmas. Nobody ever asks, Die Hard's a Christmas movie? Nobody ever asks, is Gremlins a Christmas movie? Well, is Gremlins a Christmas movie? If Die Hard's a Christmas movie, then Gremlins is a Christmas movie.
That's a great point. Well, but they always bring that up, and I don't understand that because I'm a huge fan of Bruce Willis.
Die Hard is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It is a great movie.
But it's not a Christmas
movie. It's not a Christmas movie. Thank you.
Just like Gremlins. I mean, I'm gonna start insisting that Gremlins is a Christmas movie because it's basically it happens at Christmas time. People forget that. If we're gonna talk about Die Hard being a Christmas movie,
Bubba, do you have
you could say that's like saying, have you guys ever seen the movie Eyes Wide Shut? One of the classic Stanley Kubrick's last movie.
Yeah.
It takes Nicole place Kidman during Christmas. From anything but a Christmas movie, but the same principle as Die Hard. It just takes place during Christmas season.
Yeah.
What about Home Alone? Ask me, Dave?
What about Home Alone?
Did you see that as a Christmas movie?
Home Alone? Yes, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Christmas is a central theme in the movie.
Okay.
Kyle was not having that.
I know it is, but I'm just saying, some people are, I mean, that's been.
Well, that's not even an argument because, yes. It's not about Christmas, but Christmas is a central theme of the movie. The family
they're traveling at Christmas time.
The family went on vacation for Christmas. The parents are trying to get home with him. His mom and dad, everybody come home on Christmas morning. He asks Santa to bring them back. He goes to church on Christmas Eve. I mean, so yes, it's definitely a Christmas movie. That's not even debatable.
I like it a lot.
That's what Bob was going to do the whole show. He's
sound effects.
Sound effects.
Hey, when it's 11:30, I have to keep myself entertained.
Well, I'm sorry we can't do it for you.
And I know your least favorite, the worst Christmas. I heard it today. I know the least favorite Christmas song from Matt Semenza. It's Paul McCartney, "Wonderful Christmas Time."
Oh, let me tell you something. That's
not a good song.
That song is an abomination.
Simply having wonderful Christmas.
When I hear that song, it elicits a response. I want to break things. I want to break something. I change the channel within 5 seconds when that song comes on.
Where do you guys stand on Christmas rapping by the Weather Girls?
That's not a bad song. I
love that song.
What's the song now?
Christmas rapping by the Weather Girls.
Yeah, I know what you.
Sing it.
Let's see.
Maybe Bubba can sing.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. But oh, I think I'll miss this one this year. That, yeah, that one.
Yes.
Well, we're gonna get copyrighted. We're gonna get taken off YouTube.
No, it's, you know what? I'm not trying to make Matt mad, but what's funny about it, it would be funny if you had like some old stuff like David Letterman used to do when he first started late show, late night, and just throw it off like buildings. Oh my God, if you keep playing that song, Bubba, and just breaking plates, and I'm sure Christy would love that, but that would be hysterical.
That does Bubba know, like, Bubba, we've never discussed this. Are you familiar with, you know, the Christmas songs and whatnot? The Christmas movies?
Bubba, have you ever heard Christmas music?
Of course.
Like, no, but I mean, do you watch Christmas? Like, are you, you have a good knowledge of the Christmas movies and everything?
Yeah, he loves Christmas Vacation. He, quote, loves
depending on which Christmas movies we're talking about. Yeah,
that's a classic.
If you're talking about the Home Alones, if you're talking about Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on the stop motion stuff like Rudolph and You're Without a Santa Claus and all that?
What about it?
Where do you stand on it?
Do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I mean, I
really Matt, how about you? Where do you stand on the stop motion stuff like Rudolph?
I have one of my.
Oh, that was great.
It's not something.
Hey, one of the coolest things we have.
I love Rudolph and I love You're Without a Santa Claus. Are you kidding me? I mean, Heat Miser and Snow Miser. I mean, come on. Matt, do you know the Heat Miser and Snow Miser songs?
Well, oh yeah, I love all.
We're gonna have to do that. Do you want to be Heat Miser? Or are you gonna be Snow Miser?
I'll be the Snow Miser.
No, don't. Oh, well, that makes sense. You're from up north. I'm from down south. That makes sense.
the classics are the best. I love the old
Mr. Green Christmas. I'm Mr. Sun. I'm Mr. Heat Blister.
By the way,
I'm Mr. 101.
You want to talk about
Heat Miser, whatever I touch.
You want to talk about being intimidated? One of the I was 25 years old, so I'll tell the story.
And you met
right
the
now.
Heat Miser?
No. Oh. Guess who was on the phone with me?
Snow Miser?
No, the guys that Santa created Balls. That.
Oh, the
Rankin Bass.
Mr. Rankin Bass, yeah.
The two of them, yeah.
Wow, they created Rudolph. They created Year Without a Santa Claus. So many classics.
Frost?
Did they? I don't know. Was that a Rankin Bass production?
I have to do that. Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. It definitely is, right?
Yes. Well, Frosty was animated. I think Rankin Bass mostly did stop motion.
Okay, but that was very intimidating. They were very nice gentlemen. Both of them were very nice to me. But I'm going, oh my God, I'm talking to guys that like created. Yeah. I mean,
Matt, were you part of the show yet when we had Grover Deal on from Christmas Story?
I was not part of that one, but yeah, I remember you had him on. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
That was a classic.
Scott Farkas's little toady.
That's right. Grover Deal.
Did you like the new?
We need to get Scott Farkas on.
We get
yeah, he actually
on.
Seems like a good dude. I seen him on TikTok. Did I like the new one? Yes, I did. I did
it
like
was better than what I expected.
Story. It's not a classic like the first one, but it is well intended. It has a very good heart to it. If a movie can have a heart or good, it catches the. It is not a classic of the first like the first one, but it catches the feel of the first one. It knows what it wants to be, and it. If you love the first one, then I can't imagine that you won't at least like the new one. Matt, did you like it?
It was better than those damn sequels they had that were god awful, and the. What was that one they had on Fox, Matt? The
musical? The live musical. That was garbage.
My God, it was awful. Yeah.
Did you like A Christmas Story, Matt?
I did. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I thought there were some really good scenes in it.
I thought it was well done.
Yeah, you said it perfectly. It's not as, you know, I mean, nothing's ever as good as the original, but I thought it was a good, solid effort.
It's definitely not a waste of my time like those other ones. Oh my God, they're
it catches the spirit of the first movie is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
It's not a classic, but it catches the spirit of the first movie.
So. Yeah, that's well said. Yep.
What about speaking of classics?
Well, we'll save all this for the special. We're getting on.
Okay. It's a Wonderful Life is one of my all-time favorites. I love that one.
It's good, but it's too long.
And I love
all-time beauty in that movie. One of the most
Jimmy Stewart.
Not Jimmy Stewart, oh. but I can't think of her name. His wife,
Donna Reed.
Donna Reed. Oh. Absolutely.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Matt. I thought about that last year.
You know, the funniest part of that whole movie is when he goes and he, what would life be like if he was never born, and his wife, because he never meets her, turns out to be a librarian.
I love that.
What a about single Miracle? Librarian. She couldn't possibly find another wiener that would want her.
Hey, Matt, what about Miracle on 34th Street?
I love Miracle on 34th Street, the original version, the black and white. Let me tell you something. All right, now I probably brought this up every year that we talk about Christmas movies. I am a firm believer that the writing on Miracle on 34th Street is such a well-written movie, and the ending of that movie, brilliant. How to come up with an idea to plausibly make Santa Claus real in a court of law. And they did it in a believable way in real life. They used the United States Postal Service. I think that movie is so underrated as a movie and how well written it is, particularly the ending. I think Miracle on 34th Street is fantastic.
I'm a huge fan of that.
Bubba, what is your that one? I haven't seen it for
you watch the original black and white version. Original is
much better.
Watch the original black and white version and then think about how genius that ending is. Yeah, I love that movie. I think it's fantastic.
That's, you know, like if you have like, and no offense to people that love Hallmark, but for me, I love like to watch Christmas movies.
Oh, I can't watch that Hallmark bullcrap.
No, I don't watch it. What I meant was like, you know how they have like the.
I'm a business lady from the big city, and I'm moving back to my small hometown in the country, where the local Christmas tree farm / cookie shop is in financial trouble. But it's being saved by this young man who I fall in love with, and it turns out his dad is Santa. That's every movie on Hallmark, man. Yeah. Every damn Christmas movie on Hallmark.
No, I wasn't trying to bust a Hallmark. I was just making the point of, like, for me, when they have, like, 100 movies, you know, like, they start in November, whatever it is.
October.
For me, okay, October. I can watch all the specials and all the great Christmas movies that I want to watch.
The Hallmark stuff is garbage. The only thing I watch is the Hallmark Movie Channel does rerun the old Walton's Christmas movie, Walton's A Homecoming. But besides that, I can't watch shit on Hallmark.
Not even the Golden Girls?
Right now. Yeah.
My wife watches the Golden Girls. Jessica loves the freaking Golden Girls.
That's a good show.
I'm all a big right, fan of Scrooge. Let me leave you with this. I think it's 1952, Sir Alistair Sim.
Ooh,
Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol. Yeah, that's a really good one.
I will give you a sleeper, Matt. Have you ever seen the 1999 version with Patrick Stewart?
Patrick Stewart. I was getting ready to say that.
He was good. He was good. He did a good job. Patrick Stewart. Yeah. I really like George C. Scott.
84, the 84 version. Yeah, that's good too.
George C. Scott is one of the great actors of all time. He played Patton.
The 99 version, for whatever reason, is my favorite with Patrick Stewart. I don't know why, but for whatever reason.
It is well done. I definitely think that's a very good.
Particularly being when you consider that movie was freaking made for TNT.
Yes, it was. Yep. Yep.
Wow, I've forgotten that. Yep. All right, Bubba, do you have anything?
The only thing I have is a game that was finishing up right about the time we were going live. Heck of a game tonight down at Fogelman Arena in New Orleans. You had Tulane winning in double overtime over Furman, 117-110.
Wow.
So the Green Wave are now 7-2.
All right. So we got to definitely play our best with that bunch down in New Orleans. And I tell you what, very excited. Let's keep our fingers crossed that we'll get a Christmas present Hauser will be under the Christmas tree. We'll be rocking around the Christmas tree because we have Hauser.
I don't want him under my Christmas tree. You can put him under your Christmas tree if you want to. I want him to sign with ECU, but I don't want him under the Christmas tree. That's a little weird.
Okay, well, I'm just talking about for him. I want him to sign.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, man, you guys are killing me.
All right, we're going
to
get
we
out of here.
We need to end the show.
We do. We need to stick a fork in it. We're out of here. You guys have a great, great time this weekend. Enjoy the bowl games, and we'll try to have maybe we can have a show. Like I said, on Sunday night, we'll keep your fingers crossed. We'll get out of here, Bubba.
Yeah, we got a Christmas special coming. One day this coming week. Wait, Bubba may or may not participate.
We'll see.
Of course I'll participate.
He doesn't hate Christmas. He's not the Grinch or Scrooge.
He hates it.
I just hate the Christmas show before the Christmas show at 11:40 at night.
Hour preview.
When I got to get up here in 6 hours.
Oh, right. Come on, Bubba. You got to get in the Christmas spirit.
All right.
Bubba's like, he hate me from the arena or from the
XFL.
He hate me.
He hate me. All right, we'll get out of here. You guys have a great, great weekend. We'll see you soon right here on the Sports Objective. Pirate Basketball Overtime. Again, way back when Pirates lose tonight, 70-65 to Florida. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time. Good night, everybody. And as always, go Pirates.
What purple?